Okay, so welcome to another episode of Raw Talks. My name is Simba, and I'm live here from Living with the Spirit in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And we are a holistic treatment center that works with personal and emotional and financial freedom. And today I have John Winhall with me, an expert in polyvagal theory, and you even did your own model and your way of approaching the polyvagal theory, which is a way of explaining the autonomic nervous system and our responses that we might have in our body. And if you've seen this podcast before, you heard a lot about the polyvagal theory, so I won't talk too much about it. I will allow you to introduce yourself and we'll take the conversation from there. So welcome.
Thank you, Simba. It's great to be with you. So yeah, I'm a focusing-oriented therapist. So focusing comes from Eugene Gendlin's work in felt sensing. And what I did is to take Gendlin's work and integrate it into polyvagal theory. And I wrote a book about that in 2021 called Treating Trauma and Addiction with the Felt Sense Polyvagal Model. And I luckily got connected to Steve Porges through Serge Pringle, my friend. And Steve read my book and he said he loved it. And that was like, that changed my life. So I ended up connecting with the Polyvagal Institute. And I'm now developing a training program and teaching a course, several courses actually, so people can begin to really use the felt sense polyvagal model in their work with clients, particularly in groups, with coaches and people doing somatic body work and general psychotherapy as well. So that's me.
That's you. That's amazing. And it's funny how something like writing a book or something can open up so many doors for you. What would you say was the initial spark of writing this book? What brought you to that point?
I think it was, I love writing. So that modality made sense to me. And I had something to say, you know, after 40 years of doing this work. I found myself teaching the model and thinking, I'd love to really put this down on paper and kind of work with it some more to really fine tune it. Because when we write, you know, we have to really distill what it is that we're thinking and what we do. And while that can be really hard, it's an incredibly powerful practice to do that, and then to get the word out. Like, I found myself teaching this stuff in the third floor of my house, and people really being profoundly moved by the ideas and by the practices. And I have had some incredible teachers. You know, I mean, I studied with Eugene Gendlin, the father of the felt sense, for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. So it's just in me, you know. And so, yeah, it was really a calling, I think, you know, to put it down on paper and pull these ideas together that we're developing over the years of doing the work.
Amazing. And your background, have you have your own clinic set up, or have you worked? Okay, so you had your own clinic.
Yeah, I mean, I survived about 3 years of being a hospital psychiatric social worker. And oh my God, I got out of there fast and started my own clinic. And yeah, then the kids moved out, so I had more space. So opened up a group room on the third floor and have graduate students. And we call it the Borden Street Clinic. And I train students here to become focusing teachers and focusing oriented therapists, which is the somatic practice of felt sensing. And anyway, we see clients. I don't see very many clients anymore, but I still do a women's focusing oriented therapy group. I've been running that for years, and I never want to stop doing that. But it's a busy place. It used to be a lot busier in person before COVID. Now everybody, we've all gone online. But of course, now I'm doing so much more teaching. It's online, a lot of it, not all of it, but as you know, right? It's like everything changed with COVID.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And how would you say your teaching or the result, how has it translated from being in person to now working online with something that's, for me, seems like it's very tangible, right? It's not so much abstract of thinking about something. It's really embodied as somatic practice.
Yeah.
How has that been for your students doing this work online versus in person?
Well, surprisingly, amazingly, I would never have believed it. I really wouldn't unless I had experienced it. But we are very able to really connect deeply with people online. I think maybe because we're working in the body with the felt sense. But we've been teaching through the Focusing Institute. We've been teaching focusing and focusing oriented therapy online for years. So I had a lot of experience doing webinars and teaching focusing online to people, lots of our community who live all over the world, particularly in Latin America. So I was running groups and whatever with my Spanish-speaking friends many years before COVID hit. So it wasn't really that different for me in that way in our community. And now I'm just doing, you know, these big trainings that happen. It's pretty weird when you're in a webinar. You think about that from a polyvagal perspective. If you can't see anybody, you know, you can't see people's faces, right? To be able to give these cues of safety and warmth and kindness. But I imagine them. I just find the audience in my body. And now I'm really used to it. And I'm fine with it. I don't prefer it. But it's a way to really have influence, you know, with large numbers of people. And it's amazing to have that opportunity. Is really amazing.
Yeah, the reach is phenomenal. It really is. And I remember too, pre-COVID, there was a lot of, I teach TRE, tension and trauma releasing exercises from Dr. David Berselli, and also teach breath work. And I remember all the teachers and the community said, oh, we can't do this at home. We have to be there with the person. What if something happens? And what I realized after COVID, and what a lot of other people did too, was it can actually be better because they're in their own safety of their own home.
Yeah.
So the environment is not strange to them.
Yeah.
And so it was, in many sense, was actually better sometimes than having to go to a new place and get to know the environment and everyone here. And you're still in your own little bubble, but you get to experience the benefit from all of these tools. So, yeah, I hear you. I feel that too. The in-person is always... Yeah. It's magical. It's something different.
Yeah.
You can engage and see the responses.
Yeah, it is. But we can still go very deep online. As long as we know that our clients have enough safety supporting the work that they're doing, right? That's always my I'm very mindful of that, because when I was working just here, you know, I would always say to people, nobody leaves if they don't feel okay to leave. And so we had enough space that, you know, just go to that office and take some time at the end until you're ready. Don't leave if you don't feel ready. Of course, you can't do any of that online. So it's just, I think, a matter of paying a lot more attention to what the person has around them, right, in terms of supports. Plus, in our focusing practice, we focus in partnerships. So we teach how to connect down inside into the body, into the felt sense in the body. And then we also teach how to listen to your partner. So how to support your partner in that process of their own. And so that is tremendously helpful as a resource, because I know that that people have their partners as well. And if they run into trouble, and then we have we'll do a group email so everybody can connect with each other. And you just build community in different ways, right?
That's amazing. Yeah, I can really see a lot of similarities in how I was taught to apply this into working with people.
Yeah. So
how about we go through, just explain a little bit, because
sure.
I prepared this PDF. Let's see if I can get it up in a nice way so everyone can see. So if you are on YouTube, there will be a picture live in the video that we will use to explain the model. And if not, you can go to your website, which is
JanWinhall.com.
Yeah. And you can see a little photo of the model. But why don't you take it away from here? What are we looking at on this picture?
Okay. So this is the client version of the model. There's a clinician version as well. This is the simple one. So what I did was basically to, I started off, you know, over 40 years ago, working with a group of young women who were incest survivors. And what I heard from them basically shaped how I've developed what I think about now in doing this work with trauma and addiction. And what I learned from them was that the things that they were engaging in, self-harming behaviors, were also helping them. So I started this work from that understanding, which is a very polyvagal understanding, that the body carries a wisdom that we have ignored in the West. And even maybe worse than ignored, we've really, I think in some ways, have contempt for. And this, to me, is a tragedy, because it's just wrong. So when I listened to these young women, they were doing things that, like drinking a lot or doing a lot of drugs, which made sense in terms of numbing and then helping them, right? Because they got relief from the pain, the horror of what they were going through. But other things that they were doing were harder to explain, like cutting, for example, cutting the body. How would we explain that? So in that psychiatric environment, I was being told that these women had borderline personality disorder. They were really manipulative, and it was a way of gaining attention, or it was masochistic. But when I sat with these women and I listened with what I call non-pathologizing ears, I just listened. I didn't bring in any DSM. I didn't bring in any concepts, any psychoanalytic interpretations. I just listened to what was happening for them. And what I heard was that these behaviors helped them, but they didn't know why. They didn't understand why. So back then, we talked about, in the feminist community, because that's where the embodied work was happening, we talked about numbing and flooding. We didn't really get that was what we were talking about, was emotion dysregulation in terms of the autonomic nervous system. We talked about emotion dysregulation, but not the ANS. Then, of course, Judy Herman's book came out, Trauma and Recovery, which we all gobbled up. And actually, she did talk about the autonomic nervous system in that book. When I read it again, when I was writing my book, I realized she really understood that piece, probably because she was medically trained. So she understood some things about the autonomic nervous system in terms of jolts, creating these jolts to the body, which then would release endogenous opioids and bring a numbing kind of relief. So I started to put those things together. And then when I found polyvagal theory, it really came together, because these places where people were talking about numbing, and in Judith Herman's book where she talked about these jolts that bring relief, we didn't talk about the dorsal branch of the vagus then, because that was Steve Porges' work in naming that in polyvagal theory. So then it all started to come together. And because I tend to just think and work in a very kind of graphic way, very embodied right kind of brain way, I created a model So here we have these six states in the autonomic nervous system. And I ran this by Steve Porges and talked to him about how I was seeing addiction, which I'll get to. And he said, yes, yes, yes. So then I thought, okay, I've got something here. So we'll go through the three main pathways. We called it the six Fs because it's just a simple way of understanding and remembering states in the nervous system. That really came from my clients. I said, let's just make it simple. I'm like, okay. So, and then they started downloading it on their phone and sticking it on their fridge and using it. They really taught me how to use it in a way that is like a visual cue to orient to where you are in your body, in your nervous system state, which of course is vitally important because what state we're in determines the story we tell ourselves about our experience, right? That's Steve Porges' intervening variable. So the bottom we called flock. This is the ventral state of social connection and enough safety in the body to be able to settle and feel calm. It's what Steve calls the state of health and growth and restoration. It's a sweet spot. And on the top right-hand side, we've got flight, fight. So this is, you know, the sympathetic branch of the nervous system, right? Where the first place we go to mobilize when something happens that is scary or it's a threat. So we try to either fight or get out of there. And if that doesn't work, then this other branch, this other pathway of fold and collapse on the other side, the gray, disconnected, dissociated, numbing state, depressed state that occurs, that this is the dorsal branch that Steve Porges has named for us and brought into the autonomic nervous system as a way of understanding how bodies help us to stay safe. And so there's those three main pathways in this new version of the nervous system. And then we have blended states. And we're developing these as we go along. This is just, it's always changing because it's so new and fresh. And we're all working with it. And so we're kind of comparing notes and trying to stay on track with what really makes sense and what's scientifically sound. And so it's a journey and it's really exciting. So a blended state is a state where there are two parts of the nervous system interacting together, right? So fun is, this is actually a blended state between grounding in ventral of flock, connecting with people and feeling safe, with some sympathetic adrenaline energy that mobilizes us, right? So we're it's like kids playing in the playground and they're laughing and they're having fun until somebody gets hurt and then they shift up into sympathetic and they either, you know, punch somebody or come home crying home to hopefully a parent who's there with open arms to connect with them. In a newer version of the model, I've also added besides fun, a state, a blended state we called fired up. And this is, I think, really important. I really came up with it because I realized when I was looking at where I am these days, I thought, well, you know, like, where am I? I mean, this is all fun, but there's another little element here of, you know, when you're live streaming or you're talking in front of large audiences or whatever. So I realized, no, it's something a little different than fun. It's kind of fun, but there's a fired up quality to it of, you know, woo, something new, something exciting, something. And so that's how we added that. You can find the new version on my, we're always changing the versions on my website, but this is, you know, this is how things evolve, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the other side, we have flow, and this is this beautiful state of connection through flock with, social engagement with other people, that ventral kind of feeling. But there are also places in the body where there is this also this presence of the grounded, beautiful part of the dorsal branch of the vagus when we feel safe. So these are situations like meditation, for example, if we're sitting, or focusing practice. Lovemaking can be like this, breastfeeding, places where the body feels safe to be relatively still and quiet and calm, often inside. So that's another blended state. And then in terms of addiction, the top state in the model of fixate freeze, and you can see how we've integrated both colors, right? So there's this, the red of sympathetic and the gray of dorsal. And we made it the shape of like a propeller. Mm-hmm. So when I had this chance to do a Skype back then in 2018 with Steve Porges, I met him in person at the United States Association of Body Psychotherapy's conference. Wonderful organization. If viewers don't know it, it's a great organization. And he agreed, yeah, let's get together. I want to hear what you're doing. So we had a Skype and I said, you know, I think that addictions are ways of people attempting to shift from one state to the other in the nervous system. And then sometimes back again. And you could see this, you can see it really clearly with, say, drinking, where somebody comes home from work, say, they're in flight fight, they're in sympathetic, their heart's beating, they can't settle themselves, they drink a bottle of wine, and they shift into dorsal. It's a very effective way of bringing relief when either not enough safety is present for the ventral branch of the vagus nerve to be activated, or we're triggered and we're not perceiving enough safety, right? Because we know that can happen. These in these trauma feedback loops that are the top half of the model, we can get stuck up there. And we're still going around that feedback loop without really, the body isn't reading the safety. And so that's where we come in with our neural exercises, our practices, to help people to shift down into the lower half of the model where they're living in these ventral states more of the time. Of course, we need all of them to manage whatever environment we're in, right? They're all a gift. So that propelling, that the function of addictions is to propel us back and forth between shutting down and mobilizing, or mobilizing and shutting down, because the body can only sustain those dysregulated states for so long. And then it has to either collapse to hibernate, or when that goes on for too long, to shift into more of a sympathetic state to mobilize. So that's really the function of addictions through a polyvagal lens. And so in that way, we would see them within the context in which they occur as adaptive. And this is kind of a, well, it's definitely a paradigm shift. it really
for sure.
brings people into shock. But really that is really the gist of it. It's like you understand how behaviors function based on the context in which they occur. So, for example, if you're a young woman and you are being sexually assaulted by your father, you can't leave. There is no mobilizing. There is no getting angry. There is no shutting, no escape. The body goes to shutting down to survive. And that's adaptive in that environment. That's how you survive, is to hibernate, right? But then, you know, it gets to the point where the body is like almost dead and crying out. So addictions are very powerful ways of also, for example, cutting the body. For some folks, will release a kind of adrenaline rush. And that shifts you back into sympathetic to mobilize. So it's back and forth. but it's going nowhere. And that's really, you know, the tragedy of the addictive cycle, right? Is that it's a freeze state.
Definitely. And I really resonate with what you're saying, that the body is always trying to correct itself through the different stages of the nervous system. And when we get stuck in one, maybe let's call it polarity or one zone, that these behaviors and patterns that we might not understand, why are you doing this? Because your thinking mind knows this is not safe, this is not sustainable for you. Why can't you just stop? Mm-hmm. But this is really what I feel like, looking at any human interaction or behavior from this lens, it just makes it less personal and more relatable, I would say, because there's always, in my experience, there's always been one situation, at least, maybe I haven't been through a trauma to that degree, but I have some understanding, because there's definitely some situation where I didn't feel safe and I had to propel between these zones for some reason.
Yes. So I love those two words. The one you said is it makes it less personal. And what was the second one? More relatable?
More relatable, yeah.
More relatable. These are great words, because this is so true. It makes it less personal. So, you know, sometimes people will say in the addiction world, well, you know, the disease model was really great, though, because it took the shame away from feeling bad, like you were a bad person. Now you're a sick person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there are problems with the disease model in addiction, but also in understanding that addictions function as ways of helping us to adapt to unsafe environments, it really does make it depersonalizes. It's like, this is how bodies are designed. This is body wisdom. This is a gift. Dissociation is a gift from the body to help us endure hell. How else would Holocaust survivors live? How else would we survive unless we could numb and shut down? This is a gift from the body. And we've lost this awareness. And this is so sad. And it's understandable why, because it doesn't feel like a gift when you don't need it anymore, you know, but that's, you know, that's where the top down process is so important. Mm-hmm. It's a bottom up, top down model where we say, yes. So that's why we are needed as therapists, as healers, is to help our clients and help ourselves to appreciate that our thinking brain, the prefrontal cortex, needs to be able to be activated to assess how safe we actually are and to update the nervous system, to rewire, right? Because we get stuck in those trauma feedback loops big time.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, and that is a big problem. But it's understandable when you think that the very thing that helped you to survive dissociation and addictions is now the very thing that could kill you. How do bodies understand that? It takes time. Because every time you walk down that pathway of the trauma feedback loop, the top half of the model, my new version has that trauma feedback loop on it. Every time you do that, you know, the whole notion around neuroplasticity, right? Mm-hmm. That what fires together. So we walk down a path of shifting from sympathetic to dorsal and dorsal to sympathetic. Then eventually the plastic paradox occurs, right? Where we develop a rut. Then we're in the rut and we can't get out. And that's where we get stuck in these triggered states. So that's our job, is to recognize that and to help people to build these new pathways through practices like focusing and felt sense and meditation and lots of other practices, right?
So how would you describe safety if you look at it from a polyvagal theory? Because that's something that for me at least, this is a big part of my work of explaining. You were talking about, you know, the prefrontal at the top down or the bottom up, that you actually feel it from your body and sensation rises and tell your brain something, because I'm feeling this in my body, this must be what's going on. How would you explain safety from the polyvagal model, from the felt sense polyvagal model?
Mm-hmm. So safety happens in the body when we're reading cues that feel comfortable enough, that we feel we're in a place where we can survive well, we're not picking up cues of threat. The part of that vagus nerve, so the vagus nerve is the longest cranial nerve in the body, and it brings all this information, like 80% of the information from this long cranial nerve is all about the body. It's about what's happening in the body and helping us to pick up these cues constantly of whether we're safe or we're not safe. This is Steve's notion of neuroception. This part of it. So the felt sense polyvagal model is a way of reading neuroception. Am I safe? Am I not safe? Which is an unconscious process, but we can make it more conscious as we learn more about it, right? And then also interoception. So am I safe in my body in terms of how I'm experiencing my life through the felt sense in my body? So these two practices, or these two processes, natural processes in the body, are what we use and to assess, and also for treatment around trauma. So when bodies pick up that we feel safe, that ventral branch of the vagus, which is above the diaphragm, up into the face, right, the social engagement system, is activated. And in that place, the body can calm down, the heart rate is beating quite nicely, and bodies know that place. We begin to really build up a sense of grounding in that place. And then through Jendlin's work, so that's one piece, is understanding the neurophysiology. But we're more than that, right? As human beings, we experience life, we create meaning in our lives. And this is Jendlin's work. So being able to pause and to quiet things down and to sense into, how am I feeling in my life right now in this moment? And I can tell that you work in your body because you close your eyes. That's so lovely. So often when I'm teaching or giving, people just look at me, you know, like, yeah, so we can connect this way. We say, oh, yes, we go inside. And actually, Jendlin's wife, who was also very much a part of developing focusing, she called this the revolutionary pause. Because so much good stuff happens when we're just quiet. And we can start to slowly ask inside, how am I in here today? And then the body starts to give some information, right? You might feel a tightness in your chest, or a sleepiness, or you might feel a warmth in your tummy. So we start by just checking in. How am I in here today? And then often, something starts to come with that.
Yeah, I just love these practices. My body just follows along. It feels like a lullaby almost. Let's go.
It is a lullaby, yeah. And, you know, Jendlin discovered this because he was a student of Carl Rogers, who was a very famous psychologist in the States, a humanist. And they were really interested in how come therapy works? And, you know, everybody was talking about, oh, well, because it's this concept or that theory or this. And they all thought it was the technique. But then they thought, well, no, maybe it's the therapist and the relationship, which is true. But what they found was that when they taped these interviews, because it was back in the 50s and 60s when there was no, you know, fancy videos, it was audio taping. And they found these long pauses in the tapes, and they asked the therapists and the clients who'd reported positive outcomes, and what they found was that the clients were pausing and they were checking into their body to see what felt right. And they were picking up on something that happened in that process, which Jenlyn called then focusing. So the idea is that through paying attention to what's happening inside and being with a partner who co-regulates with you through safety, being curious, and maybe sometimes asking a question or two, the body starts to unfold what's going on in there. Yeah, you know, that tight thing in my shoulder, that's like I'm scared, you know? Like I'm bracing, I'm up in that sympathetic state, and I'm scared. And that's where I started to cross interoception with the felt sense and neuroception with the autonomic nervous system. So that's what we've developed now in the model. And my theory is that when Jenlyn talked about how when you pause and you pay attention and something starts to open, oh, that's what it is. Yeah. I'm scared. Yeah. And then your focusing partner might ask you, well, what does that scared place need? Not from up here in your head. But you drop the question down into the body. And then it kind of opens more. It says, oh, I know this place. I need to be good to myself. I need to let in that I'm going to be okay. I need whatever that is, whatever that is. And the body actually will shift. And you can see, Jenlyn talked about this, like a physical release in the body. We all know this place where we're tight, we're tense, and then it might be like you're sitting with a friend, you're telling them your problem, and you feel this kind of crescendo of an opening, and then tears come often in a felt shift, and then you feel better. You just feel better. It's like, okay, I feel better now. I know what I need to do, right? And that shift is what I began to appreciate as a shift in the autonomic nervous system. So that often clients would come in, say, in sympathetic, tight, constricted. You're with them. You welcome whatever is there. All the discomfort, all the pain, you make a big space to welcome it. As long as you have the help of grounding and ventral energy. And something shifts and people feel better. And that shift that we call in focusing the felt shift, I think is a shift in autonomic state. Shift back down into ventral, things are better. Or a client comes in dorsal, and we know that we need to mobilize, right? So we touch into the felt sense, but you can't get much of a felt sense in dorsal or really in sympathetic. The whole felt sense of a situation forms because it's a state of integration when we're in a ventral state. So when I'm in a state of integration, my full felt sense would be that I'm connected to my body, to the physical sensation. I can feel what I feel about the problem. I can think about it. And bodies carry memories. So we can work with the memory part of the felt sense to decode a trigger, for example. And then that shift comes and we can shift into, say, from dorsal into enough sympathetic to mobilize and then come down into ventral.
Beautiful. Yeah, I also really love how I can see you're really passionate about what you do, because we talk about it, the theory, how it works, and then it feels almost impossible not to go in and practice a bit of it, because
I always do.
Yeah.
I always do, because that's what this is about. Bringing them together, right?
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I think one of the main things that really stood out for me was when I learned about the mirror neurons and neurons. Mm-hmm. And this is part of when I teach too, that I tell people, your ability to ground yourself, your ability to be grounded because of the work you are and have been doing with yourself, that's really your major strength. That's really the main strength. You might know all these tools and do this and that, but as you know, it might not always work.
Mm-hmm.
But your ability to stay grounded because you've done the work and continuously do the work is really what relates that sense of safety. How would you explain the mirror neurons for someone if they haven't really heard that concept? What is it that really happens body to body?
It's co-regulation, right?
Mm.
As we co-regulate, we're picking up on what's happening in the other person's body. It's very much what Jenlin would talk about, that interaction is first. It's not that we're separate beings, but that we are born in interaction, and that the body and the environment is really one. And so I think this is such a, it's kind of an easy way to explain that, you know, about mirror neurons, that we really read each other and co-regulate with each other in a neurophysiological way, right? As well as psychologically. And so if we're lucky and we're born into a safe enough relationship, wow, what a privilege that is. But, you know, for many folks, they aren't. Many, many, many people are not born into a safe enough relationship. And we have a lot of work to do in the world, right?
I agree, definitely. And, you know, that's definitely another part that I focused on a lot for my own personal experience, but also as I teach others, the feeling safe versus being safe and how that can be completely different. Because I might look at your life and say, well, you got this nice house and book going on and all this. Why are you stressed? It makes
blonde hair, white skin.
Yeah. Sure. We have all these.
I have lots of privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how could I be stressed? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, there's so many problems with this. I mean, white body supremacy is a big problem.
Mm.
It's a huge problem in the world. And it's hard for people to talk about it without feeling going into defended states.
Mm.
Right. So that's an important piece of the work, too, is to create enough safe spaces that we can really have these kinds of conversations. Person to person.
Yeah. Connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, again, what it goes back to polyvagal theory, nobody is safe, really, unless everybody is safe. We learned this in COVID, right?
Mm.
It's like everybody, you can't leave huge, well, we did leave huge groups of people out, and COVID still exists in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's better in privileged places like where I live. But it's still a problem. And lots of other diseases are huge problems. Mm. And the people that suffer the most from them are the people that are the most marginalized. It's all wrong. We've got it all upside down and screwed up. So there's work to do. We have to try to be hopeful about things.
Definitely, definitely. No, there's a meaning with everything. And I agree that, you know, the work continues. You spread more of this, and people will feel more embodied and like you said, if someone has a problem, everyone has a problem. It's
mm-hmm.
one organism in that sense.
Yeah, and I think it's on us to, as more privileged people, to do that work. To, you know, people ask me, well, what do you think, you know, what do people struggling with addiction need to do? And I'm like, well, what do we need to do to help people struggling with addiction? Like, it's hard to reach out when you're in a state of addiction. You're in the state of dorsal, of, you know, hiding. It's on us, right, to reach out. So that's why I have the energy that I have.
Amazing. Amazing.
And you too. You're doing great work too.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So for our listeners that have been listening to this episode and, you know, maybe really love what you're doing, hopefully, and want to know more, how can they know more about what it is you do? How can they reach out to you, or maybe not?
The best way is through my website, janwinhall.com. And I have a 6-month training that's starting again. I've done 2 of them now, again in January. And, you know, lots of different podcasts are on my website. I'm doing a free PESI training in October, UK. But yeah, janwinhall.com. My book is available there as well.
And the name of the book was?
Treating Trauma and Addiction with the Felt Sense Polyvagal Model.
Amazing.
There's also a shorter series on PVI. I think there's 3 or 4 courses now. I'm putting together a training program, so that's fun.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much. It's been a privilege and an honor to have you here. And I can talk about this forever. This is really a passion of mine as well. And
I can tell.
Yeah. And I think
thanks so much, Simba.
I think the listeners got a lot as well from this of you sharing your work and how you see it and how you can adapt it in such a practical way, but still have all the theory and the framework around it. So thank you very much for that. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, Simba. Me too.